Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Robin Wright has built her expertise in foreign affairs from the ground up. She's reported from more than 140 countries on six continents for The Washington Post, The New Yorker, The New York Times Magazine, and many other publications. Next month, she's off again to Moscow and the Middle East. But first, she'll come to Baltimore for the speaker series sponsored by Stevenson University on Tuesday, January 30th. Robin Wright is a fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center and at the U.S. Institute of Peace, where we've caught up with her by phone. Robin Wright, welcome to On the Record.
Great to be with you, Sheila.
So looking at the world today, what do you see as the biggest challenge for the U.S.?
I think there are probably four different challenges. One is the growing power of China economically, militarily. We've had a hard time building the kind of cooperation that, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, had hoped for, particularly on another flashpoint, and that's North Korea. This is a country that is not only a rogue regime, but has the world's deadliest weapon, and with no interest in either finding a compromise or ceding to pressures from its more powerful neighbors. The third challenge is Russia, and this is where Vladimir Putin faces an election this year. He'll certainly return to the presidency. The challenge, of course, is Russia's growing meddling, whether it's in the Middle East, places like Syria, its refusal to remove its support for the Ukrainian opposition and the rebels. And then the fourth challenge, I think, is in the Middle East. And this is where the world's most volatile region presents its own array of problems, be it brokering a Middle East peace process, which looks further away than a year after the president was sworn into office. And then there's the problem of the kind of protests that have rippled across the region and threatened another Arab Spring because of deteriorating economic conditions, high youth unemployment among the largest age groups, largest demographic in the region. And then there are the problems of the future of some of the failed states, whether it's Yemen or Syria or Libya. These are countries where you have to wonder whether they will even continue to exist as they have for the last century. So we face a whole spectrum of different challenges. The most pressing is probably North Korea, the longest term is China, and then there are all those perpetual Middle East problems that seem to be getting worse rather than better.
Let me pick up on your point about North Korea. How are you expecting this to unfold? I assume the cooperation with South Korea for the Olympic Games is a good sign. How significant?
The cooperation of the Olympic Games is a hopeful sign, but I am a cynic about whether it's going to lead to any kind of progress. I think it's a public relations ploy by Pyongyang to divert attention, to look like they're engaging with the world, to gain some kind of legitimacy or credibility in the international community. But I don't think it signals in any way a willingness to compromise on its nuclear or missile programs. And all it's going to take is one missile test or one tweet from Washington right after the Olympics to get us back to where we were. And in the meantime, the North Koreans would have had some time to work on their programs. The reality is there is no rolling back. There's no possibility of getting the North Koreans to surrender all of their nuclear weapons. The best we can probably hope for is containment, to make sure that there is a deterrence, that there is, that the North Koreans feel that the costs outweigh the benefits of using its military might or muscle across the region or in the even further afield in the against the United States. For the North Koreans, and I've been there, I was there on the only diplomatic mission ever carried out by Secretary of State when Madeleine Albright was at the State Department, and they believe the nuclear program is their guarantee that the outside world will not obliterate it, that it will not be forced into some kind of regime change or political change. So if the Washington's position is that it insists that the nuclear program is unraveled or surrendered, the danger is that we get into some kind of more tense situation with the North Koreans, or some trigger leads to a war that I don't think either side wants, but looks more likely if there's no middle ground from either side.
That's Foreign Affairs analyst Robin Wright here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. She'll share her insights at the Baltimore Speaker Series, sponsored by Stevenson University, on Tuesday, January 30th. Certainly, that same kind of tension seems to surround the United States' current relations or dealings with Iran. You wrote a piece in The New Yorker about the protests there. It was headlined, "Iran in Turmoil to Trump's Delight." Several dozen people died in those protests. Why do you say President Trump is happy about them?
Well, the president has indicated that he wants to see dramatic political change in Iran. It's not just differences over the nuclear deal brokered by the world's six major powers in 2015. This is a more aggressive or more ambitious foreign policy objective by the Trump administration. And the protests by the working class, by the young and unemployed, seemed to him to legitimize his position that it's time for political change. The reality is that these protests are very significant, the most significant since the Green Movement protests in 2005 over allegations of a fraudulent election. But they were smaller and more pervasive. A number of people died. Thousands, almost 4,000 were arrested. But they're not the kind of existential threat that 2009 represented. This is something that is focused largely on the economy and the inability of the regime to deliver to the downtrodden and oppressed, as the revolution promised in 1979. So the president, I think, is happy to see the Iranian people taking a stand against their government. But I think he's overreading the scope of what's happened, at least so far. This issue has not ended, even though the protests have been contained. The big question is, how does the issue bubble along? Will there be more protests? And will the regime respond by, as it's promised, trying to meet some of those demands?
You're traveling to Moscow next month to look into what?
Well, I'm going to a dialogue that the Russians sponsor with the international community, and Putin spoke at the last one, so I'm interested in hearing what he has to say, and we're going to discuss a lot of what's happening in the Middle East.
And you're going to the Middle East, too?
Yes, I'm going to the Middle East after I go to Russia to look at what's happening in Iraq, what's happening in the territories that ISIS once controlled. I'm hoping to get into Syria. We'll see if I get a visa. This is a really critical time for the region to determine whether these states can come back after defeating ISIS militarily and create viable political entities that all sects, all ethnicities recognize as desirable, wanting to invest their futures in. That's the big challenge.
Robin Wright, I look forward to seeing you when you're in Baltimore. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Foreign Affairs analyst Robin Wright, a fellow at the Woodrow Wilson Center for Scholars and the U.S. Institute of Peace. She'll be speaking at the Baltimore Speaker Series presented by Stevenson University on Tuesday, January 30th. Quick break on The Record. When we're back, we'll shift our attention to taxes. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.